Welcome to the Well It Depends podcast. I'm your host, Derek Doyle, and this is Andrew Barron. Today's episode is being recorded on February 27th, 2026. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the new retirement landscape.
The information in this episode is current as of the date recorded and is not intended as financial, tax, or legal advice. You should consult your tax, financial, and/or legal advisors before implementing any transactions and/or strategies concerning your finances.
And how it's evolved and changed over the last 30 years. And as advisors, we see it prevalent with a lot of our retirement planning specific needs and how we are getting people ready for retirement for their specific situation. To dive into this, Andrew, what the main shift that we've been seeing in the retirement space is that there has been a specific and precise shift away from pension plans in the private sector to now 401ks, 403bs, or what we would like to define as defined contribution plans. Give us a little background for the audience so that they can understand what is a defined benefit plan versus a defined contribution plan before we dive into some of the specifics.
So it is a little jargony to use these terms,
yes.
But defined benefit is what it sounds like. It is a defined benefit that you get in retirement. Traditionally, people think about this as pensions, where you work for a company for 20, 25, 30 years, and you get some percentage of your average salary for life, and it may even continue for your spouse. This was often set up back when people were living to maybe 60 years old, so the funding requirements were a little bit different when it was set up versus the funding requirements today where people are living into their 80s, 90s. We have someone that's over 100 in our office, right? The funding requirements for companies became extreme. So a lot of this has been pushed off onto the individual for them to save, which brings us back to the contribution side, where it's, I will make X contribution, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 towards your retirement, and then it's up to you to spend it such that it lasts for you in that space.
And just to give some like numbers and some data to back that, we've seen over the past 30 years, now just under 90% of private sector participants are under the defined contribution plan, whereas that was not the case 30 years ago, where it was mostly a defined benefit. In our space, we see it as the shift is being put on to the employees to bear the risk now, in terms of it is on your side and your plate now to make those contributions and then invest them accordingly, and hopefully the investment performance keeps up to allow you to have a retirement. That, to me, when the risk is put on the employees, that's when the financial advisor can step in, because it's not that these things have been taken place quite yet, but when you start seeing headlines where last year Trump was trying to put an executive order in where private credit, some of these alternative investments are trying to get put into 401k plans, my instant knee-jerk reaction is red flags are going off, where it's like, are these really benefiting the employee, or is this kind of just a cash grab for that specific industry? But just overall in this space, I think it is very important for advisors or employees to have advice on how to allocate your 401k. There's a lot of times that it's very easy for us as advisors to assume that everyone knows what to do, but you see a lot of cases where someone gets a contribution and they don't invest it at all. It just sits in cash or a money market in their 401k, and they could be doing much better than having it sit in cash or just a plain vanilla money market fund. I wanted to get your opinion a little bit on what are some like tips for the early person starting off on with a 401k or 403b to start investing, and to maybe some foolproof guides to making sure you are saving enough into your retirement plan.
I don't know if I can make it foolproof, but some good trends to do are save anything, especially if you're first starting out. It can be challenging depending on what your expenses are, since you may not have a lot to start with as a cushion. So you may need a lot of your income for your current expenses. But even if it's only 1%, only 5%, you may feel like it's not enough. But what you have on your side is time. So the way to get to those 15, 20% targets that you should be reaching for is every time you get a raise, maybe every year, or when you get a promotion, take a portion of that raise, maybe half of it, and increase your savings rate, and use the other half towards your current cost of living. I think it helps psychologically, since you are still getting a benefit, since you are seeing a higher paycheck, but you're also paying yourself in the future, and it can help make up for those early years where you may have been saving single digits to overcome those higher double digit rates where you're targeting.
Yeah. And talking about setting up automatic contributions, I think it's also important for the audience to understand the annual limits behind some of these contributions. And since we are in full tax season swing and we're already starting to do some 2026 tax planning, I think it's important to mention these numbers. So for people, employees under the age of 50, your annual contribution is going to be $24,500 that you can contribute to a pre-tax 401k or 403b. And the key quirk that I wanted to point up that starts this year is, if you are a wage earner above $150,000, your catch-up contributions, whether that be your regular catch-up, which is 50 to 59, or your super catch-up, which is 60 to 63, that now all has to be a Roth contribution. I do think it's important to mention that this is when maybe an advisor can step in and help you plan a little bit, because if you are a high income earner, it might make sense for you not to take the Roth contribution now with being in a higher tax bracket, and maybe delay that if your income is maybe supposedly supposed to drop once you retire. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on electing to take those Roth contributions now versus later? The question we usually like to ask is, your income going to be higher now while working, or is your tax rate going to drop as soon as you stop working because your income falls?
There's a lot of considerations.
Yeah.
I mean, the big thing on any retirement is the contributions, since you're limited every year to what you can contribute, and what you're honing in on is that catch up. And so since you only have a truncated number of years to even take advantage of that, it's hard for me to say to not do it, but it really depends on what other assets you hold. Where is your income? Because just being over 150 is a very broad range. Being at 180 is very different than 580, for example. Yeah. What is your income? What other alternatives are available to you? Because especially high income earners may have outside plans besides just a traditional 401k that may make more sense to fund instead. Or just a traditional brokerage account if you are especially light on taxable assets.
Yeah. And talking about where you're at in terms of your life stages and where your income is, I think it's also important to revisit your 401k or 403b every single year and look to possibly rebalance. A lot of times your allocation when you first start working at 26 is going to be very different than your allocation when you're 5 years out from retirement. And a lot of times it's very easy for you to forget to go ahead and rebalance and shift away from maybe some of these risk assets as you get closer to retirement. So I think it's important to always rebalance your account, you know, every single year, just as a maintenance check in to see where you're currently at and where your account's sitting. One of the next things, Andrew, that you and me come across often is the benefits and the perks of, once you are detached from that employer, how many advantages there are from rolling your old employer account into a rollover IRA. There's things called ISA that kind of bubble wraps your 401k or 403b to limiting what specific investments you can and can't hold. But there's also things like QCDs and other retirement tax planning strategies that are not allowed inside of some of these employer accounts. Explain to the audience some of these benefits of, once you are detached from your employer, how important and some maybe missed opportunities you might have if you didn't roll your plan over to an IRA.
I'm actually going to answer your question with the opposite of, let's talk about the 401k advantages first.
Yeah.
So there's a handful of things that 401ks allow that IRAs do not. Most notably is access at 55. So if you are planning on retiring early, you can actually pull funds out of a 401k at 55 versus 59 and a half from an IRA. So that's one notable difference between the two. And then the other would be, if you work for a publicly traded company and you receive stock in your 401k, that can be rolled out in a special transaction. I won't get into the nuances on this since that's not what this podcast is about, but that can also play a role since it does save you on taxes to keep money in a 401k. But to answer your original question, why would we do an IRA? So typically, not always, but very oftentimes, because of something called ERISA, your options inside of a 401k are limited. This is a good thing for a lot of people since you don't have crazy speculative things that you might accidentally buy, especially if you are very young. But an IRA allows you the entire investment market, basically, to pick and choose how you see fit. So you can control what you're investing in a much better way than is available to you in a 401k.
Yeah.
And then, once again, there are mandatory distributions, which occur at either 73 or 75 if you're born 1960 or later, where you have to take money out of these accounts. So IRAs allow you to what is also considered aggregate. So if you even have 100 accounts, if you satisfy your RMD from one account, it's considered satisfying all of them. However, each 401k or 403b that you have to take a RMD from that account specifically. And then I think as you were alluding to, there's also QCDs, which is a qualified charitable distribution such that you can take money from your retirement account directly to a charity and it's not taxable to you.
Yeah.
So if you don't need money or you're especially charitably inclined, this can be a very tax efficient, advantageous thing to do.
Yes, I think it's very important that you pointed out the benefits of staying in your employer plan, especially early on, maybe if you are under the age of 55. No, and also when you turn 55, there are perks because we all hear in the industry the 59 and a half rule for your IRAs. That's not the case for your 401k or 403b. So it is important that there are some pros
just
for this 401k. Really? Well, that's something I learned today too. So I think it really does show you the complex strategy that can take place when you are planning to decide to roll over or not. And also it takes some planning on the side of, does it make sense for me to stay inside of this account currently or not, whether you are currently still working or not working. To touch upon kind of the last, they like to call it the three-legged stool of retirement, I do think it's important while we're on the topic of retirement to address Social Security and a lot of the concerns that you and me are hearing mostly sometimes on a week-to-week basis around the funding and the solvency of the program and specifically the trust fund. Just to lay out what me and Andrew are talking about if you are not aware of the situation we're in, Social Security's trust fund is supposed to be fully depleted, projected by 2033. And how Social Security works is every single year, it is a pay-as-you-go system where the government is collecting your payroll tax through Social Security, and that is being funded to pay out the benefits. And every single year, there's not enough payroll deductions to meet the ongoing liabilities, so Social Security has to tap into their trust fund to pay out the needed benefits. So that's just a broad view of what's going on here. But I do see scenarios, and you and me both probably agree on this, where Social Security does have a lot of easy fixes, at least in our eyes, that could be passed today in Congress, but they're just not, because it's not a priority currently. It's not, the phrase I like to say is, it's not the closest shark to the boat at the moment. Explain what are some of these easy fixes, whether that being raising the full retirement age, increasing the wage cap on which Social Security is currently taxed at, or even increasing the FICA payroll percentage. Just talk about those three scenarios and how this could easily solve the problem.
So the first one I think makes the most obvious is just increasing payroll taxes. Right now, everyone pays 6.2% and your employer pays another 6.2%, which funds Social Security up to that wage base, which we were talking about.
Yep.
If I've seen math where if we were just to increase this by 1%, so total funding is 12.4. So you pick up half a percentage and your employer picks up the other half, we get to 13.4. This alone would fix Social Security for decades. So that seems like an easy fix. Yes, it would be a tax increase, but you could couple that with the next thing is the wage base. So they already did this for Medicare in the early 2000s, where there was a cap, and they just removed it so that everyone paid into Medicare, whether you made 200,000, million, 10 million, etc. We could do the same thing with Social Security, where very high income people continue to pay 6.2% of their income indefinitely, no matter what. That would obviously help offset what maybe we need to take from everybody else. So that's not 1%, maybe that's reduced. And another thing would just be changing the age. You probably wouldn't do it for anyone, let's say, anyone over 50, so anyone who's within even a decade of benefits. But for everybody else, since they're a staggered amount of time, you could just slowly delay it, just like they did last time when we bumped it from 65 to 67. We could slowly have it from 67 to 69 or something along those lines.
And I think, like you said, it's most likely going to be some sort of combined approach. I don't see it being just one or the other. It's probably going to be a mix of the few that we've mentioned. But I do say, without having the crystal ball in front of me, I do think that we are, you know, just not worried about it as a country right now. But I would say, we've been saying this to clients, there is probably no scenario where Social Security is completely wiped off the face of the planet, where it's not being funded and benefits are not being paid. That is really the backbone for the retirement community and the retirees for the last, call it almost 60, 70, 80 years.
More than that.
But there is no scenario, in my opinion, where it just completely goes away.
No, it's just a law. So if the Congress was going to get rid of it, those people would all be eliminated and new Congress people would be voted and they would fix Social Security if it really came down to that. I hope we aren't a year away and we're talking about this in 2032 where nothing's been done and it becomes much more of a hot button, where every year that goes by is a little bit more concerning. But it is just a congressional act that will solve this.
Yeah. And that goes into, I wrote a blog on this. Your own Social Security statement states that this is not intended to be your full retirement income. Social Security is well aware that this is, you're not supposed to be treating your Social Security as your only source of income in retirement. And that ties into what we were talking about before. Social Security is, it is important to save and contribute to your other retirement plans so that you do have a wide variety, a diverse selection of income when it comes to retirement. Social Security or your pension sets a base floor for you, and then you have other avenues, whether it's your IRA, a Roth IRA, a brokerage account. You have other means that you can supplement areas of your retirement income with, and you should never be relying on one vehicle for your retirement spending needs ever. I don't think any advisor would ever recommend a one bucket approach to retirement spending. I think the only other thing that we get talked about a lot in meetings with clients is when to take Social Security and some of the nuances around the age, whether I should be taking it early, at full retirement, or delayed retirement. Any thoughts or opinions on, to simplify that question for some people that might be still asking themselves, when should I take and why?
Those kind of are the three big times is, do you take it early, maybe age 62, which time I think this makes sense for people are you're truly desperate to transition into the retirement stage of life. You're done with working. Maybe you don't enjoy your work, or maybe you have health issues and you don't expect to have a lot of time in retirement. This may make a lot of sense for you. Yes, you understand that I'm getting it today and I would overall have less if I live into my, let's say, 80s than if I chose one of the other options. But once again, it does give you assets today and cash flow today that you wouldn't otherwise have, which helps take pressure off of drawing money off of your other assets. So in some ways, this can actually be a good strategy for some people. Next one is full retirement age, which by its name is the amount you basically have been saving for your whole life. So I think this makes sense for a large number of people since it is the full benefit. And if you really look at where the break even is between full retirement and 70, which is maximum, it's often in your early to mid 80s. So you have to ask yourself, do you care that you're getting more from Social Security in your 80s or in your mid 60s, which maybe makes a better sense if you're considering traveling or things like that. And then for 70, for people that are very wealthy, where it's actually almost a burden, where it's extra income they may not even need, delaying it to maximum makes the most sense. Or if you know you have longevity, if people consistently live to 90s or 100 in your family, waiting all the way to 70 may also make sense.
Yeah. And to summarize basically the three options that you laid out, there is truly no one size fits all approach to this. It is case by case and it is client by client. We cannot ever sit down and say that this, that 65 or 60, age 67 is the best solution for everyone, because it is never as easy as that. And that's why when it comes to retirement and retirement planning, it is important to start having these conversations and start looking at the numbers to see what makes sense for your specific case and scenario. But overall, I think we talked about pensions, 401ks, Social Security, the outer sphere of what retirement is and how it can be used and what are the different income sources and how you can invest to make sure you have multiple streams of income once you do hit retirement age. It's always a very complex conversation to have, and that's why having an advisor can give you more confidence as you enter retirement. So we'll end the episode today, and this was the Well It Depends podcast. I'm your host, Derek Doyle.
And I'm Andrew Barron.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for watching. If you found this video helpful, give it a thumbs up and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss future updates. Looking for more insights like this? Head over to our website at jgua.com for additional resources. And if you'd like to talk about your personal financial goals, we'd love to help. Just click the Schedule a Meeting button highlighted on your screen to book your complimentary consultation. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you in the next video.